Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Pei Tes. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 12 lines from the top of Daf Pei Tes. Omer Rebbe Abba, Koshe Gezel Haneechal. Gezel Haneechal is a difficult problem to solve. Shafilu Tzadikim Gemurim Einon Yecholim Lahachziro. Even the righteous are incapable of restoration. What is Gezel Haneechal? So this represents a situation where someone steals and then uses up whatever item he sold, whatever he stole. Therefore, the item itself that was stolen isn't available to return. Now, to establish how much exactly was stolen, what was the value, is very difficult to determine. And as a result of that, the Gemara points out that even the righteous would have a difficult time of doing tshuva with regard to that if they had, let us say, committed such an act. Shenemar, a posuk is cited involving Avraham Avinu, not that he stole, heaven forbid, but from this posuk we learn the concept of how difficult Gezel Haneechal is with regard to doing tshuva, doing true repentance. The pasuk says, "Bil Adai Rak Asher Ochlu HaNeorim." For those who want to see more on this topic, we direct your attention to the commentary of the Maharsha. The Gemara continues, "Omar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Shimon." Rabbi Yochanan says, "In the name of Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Shimon, Kol Mokom Shata Moitzei Dvor of Shel Rabbi Eliezer Benoy Shel Rabbi Yosi Aglili Behagoda, wherever you see Rabbi Eliezer, the son of Rabbi Yossi Haglili, mentioning something in Agadic literature, asei oznecha ka'afar cheses. You should make your ear like a funnel. In other words, concentrate, just like a funnel concentrates that which is poured into it. Concentrate on what he has to say." Apparently, this Rabbi Eliezer was an expert in the area of Agoda, and the Gemara continues with such a comment or observation. The pasuk says, "Lo meirubchem mikol ha'amim, choshak Hashem bochem, ki hama'atatem mikol ha'amim." The pasuk in Sefer Dvarim says that you, the Jewish people, are not of great number amongst the nations of the world; rather, you are the smallest in number. We are going to continue with the Gemara that darshens it and takes it out of its seeming literal context and explains hama'at not in terms of numbers, but in terms of humility. In other words, ma'at meaning small or minimum. One who is a humble individual minimizes himself, minimizes his importance with reference to his surroundings. So before we continue with the Gemara, let's just glance at the Nosei, the topic heading we have in the outside margin in our Shas Ozer, the cornerstone of our Gemara marking project. You can see we have titles on the outside margin listed as Nosei, and at times when new geometric forms appear, we will explain them under a heading called Mivneh, which means structure. Here we've written, Gedolei Amenu, the greatest of our people, Hoyu Anovim, they were people of humble spirit. Avram, Moshe, Aaron, and David. Benigud, Legedolei Umos Ha'olam, in contrast to world leaders, Shoyu Gaavtonim, they were haughty individuals, as will be illustrated. Turning back to the Gemara, Omar Lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeYisrael. The Almighty addressed the nation of Israel. and said, based on the pasuk we just read, Choshkani bochem, I have desire for you. She'afilu b'shal sheni mashpia lachem gedula, even at times that I bestow upon you greatness, atem mimatim atzmechem lefonai, you minimize yourselves in front of me. Nosati gedula le'Avram, I gave greatness to Avram. Avram was in effect a world personality. Omar lefonai, and Avram declared in front of me, v'anochi ofor ve'efer, I am mere dust and ash. L'Moshe ve'Aaron, I bestowed greatness to these two leaders, Moshe and Aaron, and Omru, and they said, v'nochnu ma, and what are we? L'David, and I bestowed greatness to David, Omar, and he said, v'anochi tolas v'lo ish, I am a mere worm, not even a man. Avol oivde kechovim einon kain. But with regard to idolatrous leaders, idolatrous great individuals, this is not so. Nosati gedula limnimrod. Now you can see with the markings what we've done with the Jewish leaders. We underlined their names, and in contrast, we dashed underlined the names of the leaders of the idol worshipping world. And you can see we've dashed underlined Nimrod, Paro, Sancheriv, Nebuchadnezzar, and Hiram Melech Tzor. So you can see very easily who we are going to be describing. So I bestowed greatness to Nimrod. And Nimrod was a king that lived at the time of the story of the Migdal Bovel, the Tower of Babel, in Parshas Noach, in Sefer Bereishis. So I bestowed greatness to Nimrod, Omar, and he said, Hava Nivna Lanu Ir, let us build a city to challenge the leadership of the Almighty in this world. Lefaroi, I gave greatness to Paro, the leader of Egypt, Omar, and he said, Mi Hashem, who is God? Who is he at all? L'Sancheriv, I gave greatness to him, Omar, and he said, Mi b'chol Eloheho Arotzois, who is of any of the gods of the world who can challenge me, so to speak? Who can stand up against me? L'Nevuchadnezzar, I gave greatness to him. Omar ele albom se'av. He says, I will rise onto the lofty clouds, an indication of haughtiness. L'Chiram elech Tzor, I gave Chiram, the king of Tzor, greatness, and Omar, and he said, Moishav Elohim yoshafti belev yamim. Rashi explains regarding this, Moishav Elohim yoshafti shebona lo shiva rikiyim shel nechoshes. He built seven heavenly levels of copper, ve'olav yoshav aleim, and he went and sat on top of all of them, showing that he is Mr. Great. The Gemara continues. We have a new marking, a double underline with dots in it, and you can see under our Mivneh heading, these are Memros Shel Rava Vitema Rabbi Yochanan, comments made of by Rava, and some say in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. The comments you will see are related to Moshe and Aaron. Omar Rava Vitema Rabbi Yochanan, Godol Shenemar B'Moshe V'Aaron, Yoyser Mima Shenemar B'Avrom. The description that the Pasuk gives concerning the Moshe and Aaron is greater than that which is appropriate to or attached to Avram. Dilu b'Avram k'siv, regarding Avram, he declares himself, Anochi ofer ve'efer, I am dirt and dust, or and ash, efer being ash. V'ilu b'Moshe v'Aaron k'siv, Anochnu ma. What are we? In other words, on a simplistic level, when Avram says, I am mere dirt and dust, these are substances that have value. Dirt is something that can be used for cultivating produce. Afer, ash has certain types of value, use. Whereas Moshe and Aaron declare themselves, of what value are we? What are we? Indicating absolute nothingness. A greater expression of humility. V'omar Rava V'temer Rabbi Yochanan, another comment of his, and now all of a sudden we see a new geometric form, a volcano shape, and this is because we want to connect this with another comment where it mentions Ein Ha'olam Iskayim Ela, the world exists because of certain phenomenon that will be described. So Rava, and some say Rabbi Yochanan, says Ein Ha'olam Iskayim El B'Shvil Moshe V'Aaron. The world continues to exist in the merit of Moshe and Aaron. Now, what's the connection between world maintenance and Aaron and Moshe? Ksiv hocha v'nochnu mo. Regarding Moshe and Aaron, we already mentioned this. It says, what are we? Emphasis placed on the word mo. Uksiv hosam. And elsewhere it says, toila eretz al b'li mo. The world is suspended or depends upon b'li mo. And in this word, we see the mem he ending creating a connection between these two psukim. There is more to say on this topic, but for our purposes, we see a form of connection. Hence, the conclusion of Rava that the world, in fact, depends on Moshe and Aaron that describe themselves as ma. Omar Rebbe Elozer, Eino the Miskalim Ela Bashvil Misha Boilem Es Atzmo Bashas Mariva. And we will see very shortly that the pasuk we just cited can gain, let's say, an added dimension, not just the mere word comparison or letter comparison that we did, but there's further depth to it, as we hinted to before. Here he says that the world exists in the merit of those that are capable of bolem, of stopping themselves at the time of meriva, of argument and strife. One finds often people arguing and striving against one another. The individual is capable of overcoming his natural emotional tendency to argue and to shout down his opponent. He is called bolem esatzmo. He is able to stop himself at a time of strife. In the merit of someone capable of doing that, the world exists. Shenemar toila eretz al blima. Blima meaning to stop, or like in a car, one uses the brakes. He brakes himself in that sense, stops himself. It could be that, in fact, this was a characteristic of Moshe and Aaron, that at the time of strife, they knew how to stop themselves, and there are enough incidents in the Torah that would actually illustrate this characteristic. Rabbi Avo Omar, he has a different explanation, hence we're calling him number two, regarding this pasuk of Torah Eretz Ablima, Mi Shemesim Atzmo Kemi She'enoi. The world is able to subsist based on those who make themselves as if they are non-existent. Again, an expression of humility. It may be that we should retract what we said about this being a second pshat on Toile Eretz Ablimo, but there seems to be some type of connection between this and that which was mentioned before about Moshe and Aaron being an expression of they were people that made themselves into nothing. However, for the sake of more of greater accuracy, Rabbi Avo cites another pasuk for this idea of the world subsisting based or in the merit of those that make themselves as if they are not. Kimi she'eno shenamar, and the pasuk that he cites is Umitachas zrois oilam. And Rashi explains, Umitachas means underneath, Misha nidras tachas hakol, he who is trampled upon. In other words, he, an expression of extreme humility, he allows other people to have the upper hand, he allows himself to be trampled upon. So he is called zrois oilam, the arms of the world. In other words, he, in effect, is supporting the world. And even in a figurative sense, he who is underneath is the basis of that which is on top. So you have others that are on top, but they're really being supported by those that are lowly, meaning humble. And they are what Rabbi Avo is describing. The Gemara continues, Omar Rabbi Yitzchak, Mai Dichtiv Ha'umnam Eilem Tzedek Tidaberun Meshurim Tishpetu B'nei Adam. What is meant by this pasuk? Ma Umanasai Shel Adam Ba'olam Hazeh. What is the task, the job of a person in this world? Answer, Yosim Atzmo Ki'ilem. He is challenged in making himself like a mute. In other words, silence is a goal for a person to achieve. Now, Yochol Af LeDivrei Torah, when you mention silence, does that mean he should be silent even with regard to his Torah learning? Talmud Lomar, Tzedek Tidaberun. When it comes to speech and articulating yourself, that is to be done, focused upon when it comes to Torah learning. So that in the course of human relations and contact with others, silence is the desired approach. However, when it comes to Torah learning and holding forth in Torah learning, studying Torah, sharing Torah ideas, then we encourage your speech. Yochul Yagis Daito. Does this imply that one should also is allowed to become haughty? Talmud Lomar, Meshorim Tishpetu B'nei Adam. No, only when one is like Meshor, as Rashi says, one is like flat land, something easy to walk upon, as Rashi describes. Not mountainous, high and haughty, but rather Meshorim, straight, something easy to walk upon. That is how a person is supposed to present himself in the world. Omar Rabbi Zeira, V'itemo Rabo Bar Yirmiya. Rabbi Zeira, and another version is Rabo Bar Yirmiya. Mechasin Be'ofor Yir Hanidachas. Here, the Gemara, we should point out, goes back to discussions concerning Kisui Hadam, the covering of blood, which has been the topic of this perek. He says that one can use for kisui hadam the dirt, the ofor ir hanidachas. We should also point out through the markings that we have a slash before Rabbi Zeira to show that this is a new discussion. Also, on the side of our Gemara, we have under our no say heading a couple of points that we want to emphasize. One is the kisui hadam ayde ofor ir hanidachas, which we just started. The use of the dirt from an ir hanidachas. Now, it should be pointed out that an ir hanidachas is a city that has been condemned as a city of idol worship. And as such, the Torah describes that the members of that city that were engaged in idolatry, they are killed, they are put to death, and the property of the city is to be completely destroyed. And as such, it is also forbidden to benefit from. It's osur b'hano. So this particular halacha is of novel value to us. In other words, knowing that there's an isur hano regarding the property of the ir hanidachas, the use of the dirt of the ir hanidachas may come as a surprise, but we are nevertheless saying you can use the dirt of the ir hanidachas for kisui hadam. The Gemara will elaborate on this, of course. Another point that will figure in our discussion is mitzvahs lav lehenas nitnu. Mitzvahs are to be performed. They are not given to us as a source of enjoyment. It could very well be that as a result of performing a mitzvah, one experiences pleasure, but that's not what the mitzvah is designed for. So that an expression that's of great value here is mitzvos lav lehenos nitnu. They weren't given for the purpose of deriving benefit. As we say, pleasure may be a byproduct of mitzvah performance, but that's not the point of the mitzvah. And in the course of this discussion, we will discuss a lulav and a shofar and of idolatrous identity and the afer, the ash of the ir hanidachas. Let's now turn to the Gemara. So after having heard what Rabbi Zira teaches, that Kisui Hadam can be done with the Ofer Ir HaNidachas, and at this point the Gemara thinks that we're talking about the Afer, the ash of the Ir HaNidachas. We mentioned that the Torah commands that all of the portables of the Ir HaNidachas are gathered into the town center and burnt. After it's burnt, so of course you have ash. And the thought at this point is that Rabbi Zira is saying you can use that ash for Kisui Hadam. So on that, the Gemara asks, V'amai, why should that be? Isurei Hanohu. It is something that one is prohibited to benefit from. So how can you be using the ash? To answer this, we have a couple of approaches. And we've called them Aleph and Beis. So Omar Ziri Loi Nitzrucha Elo Afar Ofra. The halacha of Rabbi Zira that you're allowed to do Kisui Hadam with the Ofer Ir HaNidachas is not a reference to the ash, but Ofer Afra means the dirt of the ground. The ground is useful. Dichtiv es kol shlola tukboitz el toich rechova visarafta. The Torah, in describing the destruction of the Ir HaNidachas, it says you shall take all of its spoils, namely all of its possessions, of the Ir HaNidachas, of this idolatrous city, gather it together into the rechova, like the main, in the public area of the city, visarafta, and burn it. And that is what's forbidden to benefit from. And we explain, Misha'eno mechusar ela kvitza usreifa. What is osur bana? Only that which needs gathering and burning. Yotzazeh, to the exclusion of the ground dirt, shemechusar, it would need not just kvitza, gathering together, but tlisha kvitza, visreifa. Tlisha is detaching it, in other words, digging it up. So when the Pasuk describes that which is forbidden with regard to the Ir HaNidachas, it's referring to those items that need simply to be gathered and burnt, but with regard to the dirt of the ground, that wouldn't be possible. You don't just gather it, you have to first dig it up. So the fact that it needs to be dug up shows us that the Pasuk that was describing that which is prohibited in the Ir HaNidachas does not include the dirt. The dirt which, as we said, needs to be dug up first. And hence you can use the dug up dirt of an Ir HaNidachas for Kisui Hadam. The Rava Omar. Rava has a different approach, and he says, Mitzvahs lav lehenas nitnu. In other words, we're talking about the mitzvah of Kisui Hadam, and the use of even the ash, the Ofer Sreifa, even the ash is not considered a violation of the Isur Hanoh of the Ir HaNidachas. The Torah prohibits using Ir HaNidachas for benefit, for pleasure, for personal benefit. It does not prohibit the use of Ir HaNidachas for the performance of a mitzvah. Yosef Ravina v'ka'omar lo l'hoshmaitza. So Ravina said over this teaching, Esvei Rav Rechumi l'Ravina. Rav Rechumi raises an objection, and you can see from the markings, we have little triangles introducing shofar and lulav, and we will be speaking about a shofar and lulav from an avodah zara. And yet, if you use the shofar and lulav avodah zara, we'll see sources indicate that you are not in fulfillment but of the mitzvah. But if you say that mitzvahs lav lehenas nitnu, so what? They may come from an idolatrous source, which is basically usur to benefit from. But if you say mitzvahs lav lehenas nitnu, so then why are you not going to be in fulfillment of these mitzvahs, shofar and lulav, if you use a shofar and lulav of avodah zara? So Rav Rechumi asks, shofar shalvid yisuchavim lo yiskabo. A shofar that was of an idol or that was worshipped is not allowed to be used for tkiyas shofar. My love, what does this imply? Im toka lo yotza, that if you were to use it, you would not be in fulfillment. So the Gemara says, lo, that's not the understanding. Rather, im toka yotza, that if you were tokea, if you did it, then you would be yotze. But as Rashi says, lechatchila, as a first choice, you should not use it, because its source was of idolatry. It was from an idol, and as such, it's considered disgusting. We have another source, lulav shel avodis kochavim lo yitol. The lulav of an idol, one should not take. My love, does this not imply im notal l'uyotza, that if you did use it, you're not in fulfillment? And once again, that would be a challenge to Rava's explanation, who said that mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu. Here you see that even though it's a mitzvah, you still are not in fulfillment. No, that's not the understanding, but rather im notal yotza. If you used the lulav of the Avodah Zarah, you would actually fulfill the mitzvah, because the use of the lulav for mitzvah performance is not within the realm of prohibition concerning Avodah Zarah. With regard to Avodah Zarah idols, one is prohibited to benefit from them or derive pleasure from them, physical pleasure, that is. And the performance of a mitzvah is not that which is prohibited. The Gemara asks, how can you say this answer, that if you used the shofar or if you used the lulav, you would be yotzei? But we have a Tanaic source that says, toka lo yotza, notal lo yotza. If you blew the shofar, if you took the lulav of Avodah Zarah, you are not in fulfillment. So this once again poses a challenge, that namely, that if you want to explain that the offer, even the ash of the Ir HaNidachas is allowed, even though it's something that's osur b'hanoah, based on the idea of mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu, so then how do you explain shofar and lulav of Avodah Zarah? Why is it that you're not in fulfillment of those mitzvahs? The Gemara answers, Omar Ravashi, Hochi Hashta, how can you compare the case of shofar and lulav to the case of the ash of the Ir HaNidachas? It may be true that mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu, and that will be the justification for using the ash of the Ir HaNidachas. However, in the case of the shofar and lulav, there's an added problem. Hasam, with regard to the shofar and lulav, shi'ura bo'inon, they require a given dimension. In other words, a lulav has to be a certain number of tvachim, of hand breadths, in order for one to fulfill the mitzvah. The Gemara in Maseches Sukkah discusses the size of a lulav being 4 hand breadths. A shofar also has dimensions, as is described in Maseches Rosh Hashanah. It must be large enough that when you hold it in your closed hand, you should be able to see the ends of the shofar. So it has a given dimension. The avodas kechavim, and when it comes to idols, kitusei mechtas shiros, since idols themselves are to be destroyed, that means their shiur is kitusei, is smashed. Since they're supposed to be crushed and destroyed, so we look at them right now, even if you haven't yet crushed them, we view them as if they've been crushed. Hence, they are lacking the required dimensions. Of course, as we said, in your mind's eye, they are said to be lacking the dimension. However, hocha, when it comes to the kisui hadam, the material used for kisui hadam, the more crushed it is, the finer it is, the better it is for kisui. so that based on, once again, the principle of mitzvahs lav lehenis nitnu, we can understand your use of the ash of the ir hanidachas for kisui hadam. With regard to lulav and shofar, even though we're talking about a mitzvah and not hana, nevertheless, there's an additional problem or requirement that cannot be met when you're dealing with a lulav of shofar of Avodah Zarah, namely the issue of the required dimension that they would be lacking. So with that, we finish the sixth perek, and now continue with the seventh perek of Maseches Chulin, perek Gid Hanoshe. The Gid Hanoshe is a nerve that's found in the hind leg or legs of kosher of animals, and the Mishnah now shares a number of details concerning this mitzvah. The mitzvah, namely, of not eating the Gid Hanoshe. The Gid Hanoshe is that which is forbidden to eat. One has to know that when slaughtering an animal, that he must remove that before he can think about eating the hind legs of an animal. Gid Hanoshe, noyeg ba'aretz u'b'chutz la'aretz. The prohibition of Gid Hanoshe is binding not only in the land of Israel but in the world over. Bifnei Abayis v'shelo bifnei Abayis, during the time of the Beis HaMikdash and also in its destruction. In other words, nowadays, even after the Beis HaMikdash. Bechulin uv'mukdashim. It's binding within the realm of the mundane, common meat, and also within the realm of sanctified, of sacrificial meat. V'noyeg b'vehema u'b'chaya. And it's binding with regard to domesticated as well as undomesticated animals. This is in stark contrast to some of the mitzvahs we have seen in the previous prokim, where we spoke about kisui hadam, which was a chaya related mitzvah and not behema. We saw oisoi ves benoi, the prohibition of slaughtering parent and offspring on the same day, which in fact was a behema a halacha, not a chaya halacha. The Mishnah here goes on to say beyerech shel yamin. The prohibition of the Gid Hanoshe applies to the nerve found in the right and left hind legs. It's not applicable to a bird. The Gid Hanoshe is not applicable to a bird because the bird does not have a kaf. A kaf is we'll see later in the Gemara, is a type of shape or formation of the meat that surrounds the thigh. V'noheg b'shlil. The prohibition of Gid Hanoshe is applicable to a shlil. This is a fetus found inside a slaughtered animal, and Rashi explains a 9-month a live fetus that's found inside a slaughtered animal, the Gid Hanoshe is forbidden. Now, the unique feature of this is, as we've learned in previous sugyas, that if you slaughter an animal and find in it a live 9-month pregnancy fetus, there is a machlokas tanoim, but the chachomim hold that doesn't need shechita. So even though we've seen a leniency with regard to the requirement of shechita for such an entity, nevertheless, with regard to the Gid Hanoshe, it is binding with regard to the Ben Teisha Chai. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Eino Noheg B'Shlil. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with the Tanakam and says, it's not binding when it comes to a shlil. The nerve of the legs of that embryo are not prohibited. The chelboy mutter. The chelev, we're talking about the chelev of the shlil, is allowed. Chelev is a substance found in different parts of animals that is forbidden to eat. Sometimes it's translated as the forbidden fats. But when you study the sugya, you see it's not just fats, but it also involves membranes around certain or on certain organs. It has to be removed. But when it comes to the shlil, the embryo, so the prohibition of chelev doesn't apply. V'ein hatabochim ne'amonim al Gid Hanoshe divrei Rabbi Meir. the tabochim, these are the butchers, are not believed when they say, we removed the gid hanoshe, because it involves a great deal of trouble. So there's a certain amount of presumed laziness that we make, and therefore when they say they removed it, you can't just go ahead and take the meat and eat it straight out. But you would have to check out yourself to see if it was removed. V'chachomim omrim ne'emonim olav v'al hachelev. The Chachamim disagree and say that they are believed with regard to the removal of the Gid Anoshe and with regard to Chelev. The Sukkah that opens up the Gemara focuses on the issue of Mukdoshim. Our Mishnah felt it necessary to teach that Gid Anoshe is applicable to sacrificial animals. The Gemara opens up with a question that this seems to be obvious. What, just because someone dedicated an animal to the Mizbeach, to the Beis HaMikdash, to be slaughtered as a korban, you would think that the prohibition of Gid Anoshe all of a sudden disappears? Why would you think such a thing? That is the opening question of the Gemara. As you go on in the Sukkah, we, in our markings, have placed triangles, and you can see that just by scanning the daf. Under the Nosei Mivneh heading that we have in the outside margin, you see we featured a triangle, and we've explained these are Nisyonos, attempts, Lahazbir, to explain Hodikotani Gid Hanoshe Noe Gam B'Mukdoshim, that which the Mishnah teaches, that the prohibition of Gid Anoshe is applicable to sacrifices as well. So, as we said, as we go along in the Sukkah and go on to Daf Tzadi as well, these triangles will represent attempts to explain why this was taught. The Gemara, Mukdashim Pshita, the prohibition of Gid Anoshe as with regard to sacrifices, that's obvious. Why does the Mishnah have to teach it? And by the way, we have a long question marking here, and you can see the kuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line indicating the lines opposite this vertical dashed line form the question. So after reading Mukdashim Pshita, you continue with a tone of wonderment. Mishum de'atashe pokale isur gid hanoshe. Pokar Iser Gid Minei, because you sanctified it, would you have thought that the prohibition of Gid Hanoshe stops or disappears? V'chi Teimo, and if you try to say that maybe what the Mishnah is teaching is as follows: Yesh Begidin Beno Saint Tam V'osi Iser Mukdoshim V'chayil A Iser Gid. Maybe what the Mishnah is trying to tell us is something else. That the Gid has taste to it. And the taste that it has will be responsible for this. That the Iser Mukdashim, that is when you sanctified the animal, that represents an additional level of prohibition, an additional iser. And that iser attaches itself or is added to the pre-existing prohibition of gid. Let's glance at the Rashi. Yesh begidin beno seitam bebosar. In other words, the gid produces a taste that could be perceived in the meat. The Ashminin Hai Tana, and what the Tana might be teaching, the Ha'oichel Gid Hanoshe Shel Mukdoshim Lo Kishtayim, that a person, if he were to eat the Gid Hanoshe of a sacrifice, he would be guilty of two offenses. Achas Mishum Gid, one because of eating the basic Gid, and that Iser is such, Shafilu Eitu, even if it were tasteless, like wood, HaTorah Chayva Olav, the Torah would prohibit it. The Torah prohibits it anyway. In other words, the Torah prohibition concerning the Gid itself is simply because it is a gid, not because it produces a taste. The achas, and another prohibition would be mishum mukdashim, because you've eaten something that's sanctified. But that prohibition is shiyesh botam, because you ate mukdashim that has taste to it, v'ne'ene mina mukdashim, and you enjoyed it. This, by the way, would be in opposition to, let us say, someone chewed on the hairs of a sacrifice. That would not involve deriving any pleasure from it per se, and therefore it wouldn't be considered something punishable. V'shaminon mino tarti, and from this Mishnah we would then learn 2 points. In other words, if the Mishnah, by telling us that the Isser of Gid HaNoshe is Noig B'Mukdoshim, and is in effect telling us that the Isser of Kodshim comes and attaches itself and serves as an additional offense beyond the Gid HaNoshe offense, this, if that were the case, we would learn 2 things. Chado, Rashi says, the Yesh B'Gidim Enosei Tam, that Gidin produce a taste, which is a point of controversy in the Shas. So this Mishnah could have been used as a source to prove that Gidin do produce taste. The Chado, and a second point that this Mishnah would have been revealing, is the Isser Chal Al Isser, that a second prohibition can attach itself to a pre-existing prohibition. Ulafuke miman domer b'hai pirka ein begidin b'no Saint Tom, and this Mishnah then would come to represent an opposing source to he who holds that Gidim don't produce taste. Well, all of this is theory. That's why the Gemara said v'chitemo. The v'chitemo expression indicates something that will be rejected. So if this were in fact the point of the Mishnah, when it says that Gid HaNoshe is Noig B'Mukdoshim, and the point would be that Isser Chalal Isser, that the Isser of Mukdoshim, of benefiting from sacrifices, attaches itself to Gid and represents then a second prohibition. Well, language-wise, though, that is not the Mishnah. Hi, that should have been taught as follows. Mukdoshim noyeg begid miboyele, that the new Isser of Mukdoshim attaches itself to Gid. But the Mishnah taught the opposite. It said, Gid is noheg b'mukdoshim. So language-wise, the suggested pshat of the v'chi tema can't be accepted. Ela, kosavar. This triangle, then, as we said, is an attempt to explain the Mishnah. So rather, the Mishnah is of the opinion, ein begidin b'no Saint Tam, uvemugdashim iser gid iko iser mugdashim leko. Then the Mishnah is in effect telling us that when it comes to sacrificial meat, and if one were to eat, let us say, the Gid HaNoshe, he is in violation of Gid and not in violation of benefiting from Mukdashim, because eating something, that which is tasteless from a sacrifice, is not considered in violation of the prohibition of benefiting from a sacrifice. And just to review the main point, when the Mishnah says that Gid HaNoshe is noeg b'mukdashim, what the Mishnah is saying is that when it comes to Mukdashim, there is only Gid, and not a violation of Mukdashim. Even though it's a sacrifice, you're not in violation of benefiting, the prohibition of benefiting, of deriving pleasure from sacrifices, if you were to eat its Gid HaNoshe. The Gemara asks, V'sovar Tana Didan Ein Begidim B'No Saint Tam? Can one say that the author of our Mishnah holds Gidim don't produce taste? V'hotnan, but we have later in this perek, it says, Yerech Shinizbashel Bo Gid HaNoshe, a thigh that was cooked with the Gid HaNoshe, im yesh bo benosein tam, hare zu asura. If the gid would project or produce a taste, more accurately, if the taste of the gid were perceptible in the thigh meat, so the meat would be usur. Well, we see from here that our Mishnayos are of the opinion that gid does produce a taste. So to suggest that our Mishnah is saying the opposite is just not so. Ela, hacha bevlodois kochim askinon. Therefore, what is the point of our Mishnah when it says that Gid Anoshe is noeg b'mukdashim? We're talking about the offspring, the vlodos of kochim, the offspring of sacrifices. The kosavar, and our Mishnah is of the opinion, noeg b'shliel. The kosavar vlodois kochim b'mei imon hein kedoshim. Our Mishnah is of the opinion that it's the gid is binding. The gid hanosha prohibition applies to fetuses found inside slaughtered mothers, and that vlodos of kochim, the fetuses of sacrifices, are themselves holy before they are born, namely when they are b'meim, when they're still inside their mothers. The iser gid, the iser mukdashim behadi hadadi kaasi. By saying that the vlode kochim are holy even before they are born, so the prohibition of mukdashim, of benefiting from mukdashim, and the prohibition of benefiting from the gid come simultaneously, so that we don't involve ourselves with the problem of ein iser chal al iser. In general, one may take the opinion that a second prohibition cannot get attached to a pre-existing prohibition. However, when the two restrictions or prohibitions arise at the same time, in other words, their inception is at the same time, then the two isurim can apply. We have a little note here that if you look at Tzadi, Omen Aleph, there is a second approach to this. That's why we've listed this as Aleph, where we say Isser Gid V'Isser Mukdashim Bahadi Adodi. On the top of Tzadi, Omen Aleph, there is a different approach that says, even though the Isser of Mukdashim comes earlier. So in the meantime, when we're trying to appreciate what we call here the second approach to explain the point of the Mishnah, the Mishnah, when it says that Gid Anoshe is Noeg B'Mukdashim, at this point we're really saying that we're talking about the fetuses found inside slaughtered sacrificial animals, and that the Isser of Gid and the Isser of Mukdashim are both applicable, and we don't get involved with the problem of Ein Isser Chalal Isser, but rather since the two Isserim prohibitions arise simultaneously by virtue of the fact that the sanctity of the Vlad is already before it's born, so its prohibition, the prohibition of deriving benefit from Kochim and the Isser of Gid, thereby arise, come about at the same time. There would have been an alternative approach that says that would say that the Vlodos Kochim are considered holy only upon birth, but not when they are inside. And if that were the case, so then it might be suggested that the Isser of Gid came about first, and therefore the Isser of Mukdashim can't attach itself to Gid. But that's not the approach we're taking right now. The Gemara asks, Umi motzis mukmis lo b'shlil, how can you say that the Resha of the Mishnah, where the term mukdashim appears, is talking about specifically the fetus? V'homidiktoni seifa noheg b'shlil. From the fact that the continuation of the Mishnah says that the gid is binding when it comes to the embryo, to the fetus, the issue of fetus is a point of discussion at the end of the Mishnah, but not at the beginning of the Mishnah. The Gemara answers, Hachi ka'omar. Thusly, one is to understand the Mishnah. In fact, the beginning of the Mishnah does deal with fetus, but then when the Mishnah goes on to talk about Shliel, it's simply telling us, Dovar zeh machloikis d'Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbanan. Because at the end of the Mishnah, when the issue of Shliel arises, it arises in the context of this machlokis. Namely, where the Tanakhama says it is binding by the Shliel, and Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. So, just to review this last point, the Mishnah at the beginning, in fact, could be talking about Shliel, and it just mentions it in a general sense, and the seeming repetition of Shliel later on is simply to say that that which we spoke about in the beginning of the Mishnah, that the Shliel is included in the Isser of Gid Hanasha, this happens to be something that not everyone agrees with. Now the Gemara asks another question. How can you say, as we said, that the Isser Gid and the Isser Mukdashim come about simultaneously? Umi Motzis Amerson, we should point out that this is the beginning of a long question that continues to the top of Daf Tzadi. The Gemara asks, Umi Motzis Amers de Travayo Bahadi Hadodi Kosu, can you really say that the prohibition of Mukdashim and Gid Anosher arise at the same time? V'hotnan. We have the following Tanaic source, but at the end of this question, it's going to come out that a creature is formed. Its formation precedes, we'll call it, the details. In other words, the basic creature develops, and later in its development, then the Gidin come about. So, if you hold that Vlodos Kotchim B'mei Imon Heim Kedoshin, the Vlad, the fetus, is considered a fetus early in its development before the Gid actually forms. So the Isser of Mukdashim really is coming first. And then we get back to the problem of Ein Isser Chalal Isser, so that the Isser of Gid would not attach itself to Mukdashim, which preceded it. And, of course, if we say this, then we go back to square one. What does the Mishnah mean when it says that the Gid Anosha is binding with regard to Kochim? So now, let's read this question. Umi Motzis Amris de Travaya Ba'adi Adodi Kosu. Can you really say that both of them, both meaning the Isser of Mukdashim and the Isser of Gid, arise simultaneously? Votnan, we have a source that says, Al Elu Tumos HaNozir Megaleach. A Nozir, someone who accepted upon himself Nazirite status, which involves the prohibition of drinking wine and consuming grape products, but more relevant to our immediate discussion, the prohibition of encountering Tumas Meis. If a Nozir defiles himself to a corpse, it's this Tanakh source says he has to shave himself and then later restart his Nozir observance. So it says here in this source, Al Elu Tumos HaNozir Megalech. Megalech means, is a reference to the haircut, the shaving that he has to do. Al HaMeis V'al Kezayas Min HaMeis. That has to do with his contact with a corpse or even a Kezayas from a corpse. There seems to be a sense of redundancy in this source. The Kashyalon, and we ask, Al Kezayas Min HaMeis Megalech, if on an olive size of corpse meat, one is already in violation of his Nazirus and hence has to shave himself and restart the counting later, the counting of toward the end of his Nazirus period, which is generally speaking a 30-day observance of restrictions. So our question is, if you're telling me that over an olive quantity of corpse meat, he is considered in violation of his Nazirus, and therefore has to stop and shave and recount, al kuloi lo kol shekein, on an entire corpse, all the more so. So why does this source teach that on a complete corpse and even on a kezayas min hameis? Just teach kezayas min ames, and of course for a complete corpse. The Omer Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan in answering this particular point says, lo nitzucha ela lenefel. When the Mishnah teaches that one is megalech because of contact with a mace, we're in fact describing a miscarriage. A miscarriage is considered a source of tumas mace, and since it's very small and young in its development, it's a nefel shelo nikshuru evorov begidin. Rashi at the bottom says, "Lenefel shikulo kayam." You have a complete fetus. Vadayin lo niskashru evorov begidin. The limbs have not become attached to the gidin yet. Gidin being the nerves and sinews. Sharei kol evorov notzarim. Vadayin ein olav kezayas basar. Its limbs are completely formed. However, it doesn't have an olive quantity of meat on it yet. Once again, we're dealing with a fetus very early in its development. It's described as having all of its limbs, so it's said to be complete in that sense. It's a mate. It's a mace. It's a corpse. It's a miscarriage. It's a complete entity. However, it doesn't have an olive quantity of flesh on it yet. But for our purposes, we see that there are stages in fetal development. First, limbs are formed, and later the gid forms. Alma, we see from this, iser mukdashim kodim, being that the fetus is said to be holy inside its mother, so it develops kachim status even before the gid comes to be. Rashi at the top, Amoiser Mukdoshim Kodim, the Mishosh Shenoitzer Hu Kodosh. From the time that it's formed, it already has sanctity. Vadayin lo notzer gid. And this is a point in time when the gid has not yet formed. Tochazina Yitzirus Ubar Kodemus Yitzirus Gid. We see that the formation of the fetus precedes the appearance of its gid. So, what is meant by the Mishnah when it says the Isser Gid is Noheg B'Mukdashim? Up till now, we've been saying that the Isser Gid and the Isser Kachim arise simultaneously, thereby avoiding the problem of Ein Isser Chalal Isser, and the Mishnah would have been telling us a Chiddush that both prohibitions are binding. The Gemara now takes a new approach. We're talking about the fetus, and we're now going to tell you, Afagav, the Isser Mukdashim Kodim, even though the prohibition involving benefiting from sacrifices, in this case, whatever, the fetus, which is considered Kodosh, holy, even though that prohibition sets in first, Asi Isser Gid Chayil Alayu, the prohibition of Gid can attach itself and serve as a second Isser beyond the Isser Mukdashim. Now, what about the issue of Ein Isser Chalal Isser? What about the principle that says a second prohibition does not attach itself to something that's already prohibited? Sometimes it does. And that is true if the second Isser is of greater stringency than the earlier Isser, the earlier prohibition. Shekein Isuro Noheg Bivnei Noyach. We are taking an approach that itself happens to be controversial, but we're saying that the prohibition of Gid Hanoshe applies to Gentiles as well. It's not limited to the Jews. And as such, just like a Gentile is prohibited in murder, he's prohibited in theft, he is prohibited from eating the limbs of live animals, this approach is saying a Gentile is also prohibited in consuming the Gid Hanoshe. That bestows upon Gid a certain severity that applies to Gid, making it, as I say, more severe than other mitzvahs. As a result, we can say Isser Chalal Isser, and we would have an explanation for our Mishnah. That even though the prohibition of Mukdashim sets in first, the prohibition of Gid Anoshe attaches itself, and if one were to eat the Gid Anoshe of this Shliel of Mukdashim, he would be in violation of two Averos, two sins. The Gemara asks, Man Shamis Le Hai Svoro, who has been heard to take the opinion that Gid Anoshe is binding on Gentiles? Rebbe Yehuda. Ah, but this is a problem. But our Mishnah is not like Rebbe Yehuda. The Kotoni, our Mishnah says, Noheg bevehemo b'chayo b'yerech shel yamin u b'yerech shel smol. The Gid Hanoshe is binding with regard to the yerech shel smol. We want to emphasize this point only for right now. It's binding on the left thigh as well. This is something that Rebbe Yehuda does not agree with. So how can you say that the opening of our Mishnah of the Gid being Noeg b'Mukdashim is taught in accordance with Rebbe Yehuda? And how can you say that it's binding by Mukdashim? That's by assuming that the Isser Gid is Chal on the Isser Mukdashim by virtue of the fact that the Isser Gid is more Chomer, by virtue of the fact that it's binding by the B'nai Noach, but that's Rebbe Yehuda's opinion. And our Mishnah doesn't conform to Rebbe Yehuda. The Gemara answers, Hai Tano, Sovar Lo Kavose Bechada Upolig Ole Bechada. Our Mishnah is a hybrid of Rebbe Yehuda. Namely, our Tana, the author of our Mishnah, agrees with Rebbe Yehuda on one point and disagrees with him on a second point. Our Mishnah basically agrees with him that the Gid Hanoshe is binding to the B'nai Noach, but it disagrees with him regarding the left thigh. The Gemara continues, Amar de Shamis Le Rebbe Yehuda Bitmea de Iser Lav. It may be that Rebbe Yehuda holds that the Gid Hanoshe is considered Chomor in the sense that it applies to the B'nai Noach and can be Chal on another Isser, namely an Isser of a lesser nature. For example, Tamea. Tamea means an unkosher variety animal. So that Rabbi Yehuda is telling us that the unkosher variety animal is prohibited, or the Gid Hanoshe in an unkosher variety animal, in fact, is binding. If we glance at the Rashi, you see Dibur Masel B'Tmeya. Tmeya, by the way, is a type of animal that is allowed for Gentiles. A Gentile is allowed to eat a pig, a horse, donkeys, etc. However, what about the Gid Hanoshe of those animals? So Rashi says, "B'tmeil Shamis lay." We have heard Rebbe Yehuda to say, "The osi iser gid v'chayal iser tmeil," that the prohibition of gid can be superimposed on the prohibition of pig meat. Prohibition to a Jew: a Jew cannot eat pig meat. What about the gid hanoshe of a pig? So the iser of gid hanoshe can be superimposed on the iser of unkosher variety animals. The afagav, the iser tmeo mimeimo, the iser gid eino ad shivoleid. That even though the prohibition of unkosher variety animals applies when the animal is still unborn, when it's still very early in its development, and the iser of gid doesn't apply until later. As far as Rebbe Yehuda is concerned, Gid Hanoshe doesn't apply to a Shliel at all, to a fetus at all. Therefore, Gid applies only upon birth. Even though the prohibition of Tamea, the unkosher variety animals, was while it was still a fetus, namely it preceded the Isser of Gid. The Isser of Gid will Chayel al Tamea, Mishum, and why is that? Disutmeo equals lav yamud, simply a negative, it's a lower level prohibition. It's a negative command. The Isser Gid Chomor, and the Isser Gid has a greater severity to it, Shekei Noeg Bivnei Noach. It's something that applies to Gentiles as well. And therefore, there, Rebbe Yehuda will say, Isser Gid is chal on the Isser of Behemoth Tamea. However, the Gemara goes on, Kotshim the Isser Kores Mi Shamis Lei. Kotshim, in our case, the embryo of the fetus of a sanctified animal. That fetus, if you tell us that B'mei Imon is Kodesh, that it's holy already in its mother, Kotshim carries with it a Kores penalty. For example, if someone, let us say, is in a state of ritual impurity and he eats a sacrifice, or he eats a sacrifice that was processed with an incorrect mindset called pigul, or he eats leftover sacrificial meat which is called noser. All of these cases will be responsible for a kores punishment, kores penalty. So the kotchim carries with it a very high level severity to it already before having gid enter the discussion. What are you going to tell me? That the Gid Anoshe applies to the B'nai Noach, but that doesn't make it per se more severe than Mukdashim. So as a result of that, we don't have a clear situation of something more severe attaching itself to something of lesser severity. And being that that's the case, we can't say Isser Chal Al Isser. How then are we to understand the Mishnah? What's the case? What is the situation of the Isser of Gid being Chal on the Isser of Kotshim? A new approach, and that's what's represented by our triangle. Elo hocho b'mivakeres askinon. Mivakeres comes from the word b'chor. B'chor being firstborn. We're talking here about a mother animal that is giving birth for its first time. Male offspring is called a bechor, and we know that debarechem kadosh, it has its sanctity before it's born. We have to take a look at the Rashi. Elohacha b'mevakeres askinan deloy kadosh vlad elo berechem b'yitzi osoy vashmina tona didon. The Afagav the Ain Gid Noheg Bishar Mukdoshim, the Ha Isser Mukdoshim Kodim Kida Amris, the Itzirs Ubar Kodemis Vesulo Osi Isser Gid Vechayel. Up till now, we will have to tell you that the prohibition of Gid won't be Chal on Mukdoshim, because Mukdoshim are Osir prior to the Gid. And as a result of that, the latter Isser, the latter prohibition, cannot settle upon or attach itself to the earlier prohibition of Mukdashim. Nevertheless, there is an example of sanctified animals that the Gid will apply, and that's the case of the Bechor. Rashi goes on, Afilu hachi yesh Mukdashim shagid noig behen. There are cases of sanctified animals that Gid will apply, kagon Bechor, like the case of the firstborn. Mimonafshach. Either way you look at it, the Isser of Gid will apply to the Bechor. Inoeg b'shlil. If you hold that the Isser of Gid does apply to an embryo, then Isser Gid koidem. The Isser of Gid actually sets in first, v'sulo poka, and it won't disappear upon the birth of this firstborn. So the Gid will be there under all circumstances. And of course, upon birth, the animal then becomes sanctified, because we're talking about the birth of a Bechor. In other words, as we said before, this is an exception. This is a case where it's not sanctified simply upon formation, but rather upon birth. Therefore, the Isser Gid, if you say it applies to a fetus, the Isser Gid is there first, and then the Isser Mukdashim will settle upon it. V'i ein noheg b'shlil, and if you say that the Isser of Gid does not apply to fetuses, so and rather it applies upon birth, well then travayu bahadi hadodi also, then both prohibitions are happening simultaneously, which also serves as an explanation for how the two Isurim can be binding. The Gemara offers an additional approach now, a fourth approach, with which we will coming to the end of our shiur. It says, V'i boyas emo, v'lodois kodshim b'havyosan hein kedoshim. Unlike the approach we've been taking till now with regard to sacrificial fetuses, Vlados Kachim, according to this approach, fetuses become sanctified, or we should say the offspring of Kachim become sanctified only upon birth. Bahav Yosan Hankoshan, upon their birth. And being that that's the case, the Isser of Gid, which we are saying doesn't apply to the shlil, will come simultaneously with the Isser of Mukdashim. Let's take a look at the Rashi. V'boyseim v'lodos kochim v'ashmin utona didon the lo kachi b'meimon. And our Tan is telling us that the Mukdashim, the fetuses, are not holy inside their mothers. Ela b'hav yosan b'tziyosan, rather upon their birth. Hilkoch Isser Gid noheg b'kulon. Therefore, the Isser Gid applies mishum diu kodim dinoeg bishliel. Well, Rashi here is taking the approach that the Isser Gid sets in first because it is binding when it comes to a shliel. The Isser Mukdashim. Let's reread that. The iru kadim, the noig b'shlil, the sulo poka, and it doesn't depart anymore. Once it's there, it's there. The lo tema, don't say the following. B'mei imon kedoshim, that the offspring are holy already inside their mothers. V'isser mukdashim kadim k'namorim b'nefel shalos kashrei vorov begidin. Like we suggested earlier, that the isser of gid sets in only later on. V'sulo osi sirgid v'chayel. All that do not say. Lachi nokat b'avyosan. And Rashi goes on to explain the word b'avyosan is based on the language of the pasuk. But just to summarize this fourth approach that says the vlados kochim b'avyosan and kadoshin, the vlados derive their sanctity only upon actual birth. That being the case, the gid, if you say the gid is noeg b'shlil, that in its development the gid becomes usur, we then find that it's becoming prohibited before the fetus gets its kochim status. Upon its birth it becomes kodesh, and as a result of that the isur of kochim is chal on the pre-existing isur of gid. And that's how you can have the prohibition of Gid Hanasha applying to Mukdashim. With that, we conclude our Shi'ur for today.